Esrat Hashem, at the end of the shir, we'll talk about the momentous events that have happened in the last 24 hours, starting to open a derech for us to go forward with Tfilah B'Tzibur, with the on the horizon, the reopening of the shul. But that, Esrat Hashem, at the end of the shir. At this moment, I want to take the first question from Ronnie Schlanger. There's one who asked me a question last week, and I did not answer that question at the time. The question was, of a person that's left-handed, so normally we say a right-handed person should put on his right shoe, then put his left shoe on, tie the shoelace of his left shoe, and tie the shoelace of his right shoe. And this stems from the fact that Chazal tell us, when Avraham Avinu said, he refused to take remuneration from Melech Stein. So when the schus of Michut, Klal Yisrael was zeicha to tzitzis, and Sreich now will be zeicha to tefillin. So because of that, since tefillin are normally put on the Yad Kei on the left hand, so it was a zeicha for that, we tie the left shoe first. So the question is, what should a left-handed person do? Well, a left-handed person normally puts his tefillin on his right hand. So what should he do in this whole process? So what's clear in the Shari Tshuva, Mishnah Berurah, that he should put on the right shoe first and then the left, but he should tie the right shoe first. So a right-handed person ties his left shoe first, and a left-handed person ties his right shoe first. So that's the answer to Ronnie Schlanger's question of last week, which I did not answer at the time. Now let's take up some of the questions of this week. This is a very, very relevant one for the Chag of Shavuos. Can one use a parah mixer with milchuk ingredients? You know, like you want to make the cheesecake for Yontif, and keep the mixer parah. I.e., does the heat generated by the heaters have an impact? But no, the heaters normally do not get hot enough that it should be any issue. And it's not common when you use a mixer, unless it's overheating and burning out, that it really gets hot. So you could use a power of a mixer to make a cheesecake and mix it with the cheese and milk ingredients. Right. However, subsequently, you have to be very careful and wash it very, very well, including the part where the mixer spins and you have the seam, which goes up, you know, into the internals of the mixer. Because that draws flour and cheese up into it. So you have to clean it very, very well to make sure that the next time you use it for something, you're going to use with flakes, there will be no residual cheese or milk stuff together with it. Could the Rav please clarify to determine what brachas to make on a soup? It's a little complicated. I'll give some of the examples, and I'm sure there's some examples I'm not going to touch. On vegetable soups, we make the bracha of Baruch Pri Adonai. If we have solids in the vegetable soup, you have a real vegetable soup, and you put some noodles into it, so then according to Rav Moshe Feinstein, we make two brachas. We make a bracha on the noodles. We make a bracha on the noodles. And you make a bracha on the noodles, and then you make a separate bracha of adama. I just want to go back, depending on what you mix. If you have a whisk, for example, a whisk, you should have a separate mix, whisk for milafik, and not use the power one. The regular blade, just a regular mixing blade, you can use for power of and milafik. But a whisk, you should have a separate whisk for milafik, because a whisk is very, very hard to clean due to the way the wires cross each other and all the connections. It's hard to clean it fully. So certainly the chatchila, it's a very strong preference to have a milchuk whisk. Yogurts or ice cream with toppings and fruit, typically, according to Rabbi Yosha and all of these things, you follow the road. Whatever is the roiv, assuming it's not a mezainus, then the halacha is that you make a bracha on the roiv, and you do not make a bracha on the one that has the lesser amount in physical substance present. Is a person considered to have donated mice or money for Talmud Torah when it gives to a curative organization where there are some Torah classes? And my answer to that is yes, and both. Yes, you are supporting Torah and Talmud Torah. But again, to me, that's not Torah and Talmud Torah at the highest level. A significant amount of one's hafazokas of Torah should be for Talmud Torah, which is learned at a very high level. Meaning you should support a yeshiva gedola, kailo, where there are young talmidei chachamim that learn at a very, very significant level. And that's the old, the real hafazokas of Torah. But it is some measure of hafazokas of Torah when you're having classes for kiruv, but the essence of my success was made for Avzokah Satara, was for Talmidei Chachamim, and it should be directed in that fashion. When Chazal speak of accepting Yisurim without complaining, this is a very high level. A person suffers, and he accepts the suffering that HaKadosh Baruch Hu imposes upon him without complaint. It's a very, very high level, not easy to achieve. When Chazal say without complaining, does it mean complaining to Hashem or to other people? It doesn't include both. It really includes both. Shouldn't complain to people, or shouldn't complain to Hashem. We may ask the Rabbi Nishalai, the Bechasta, to please remove me from it, but that's in the future. As the stipe in the road of a person went through a difficult time of illness, he should thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for what he went through, for the past, and he should ask the Rabbi Nishalai for the future, that he should not suffer anymore, that he should be well. What's called Madhavar Rahman and the Tav Ovid, so what's gone in the past should serve some good for us, hopefully, in life. And with that, we should thank the Rebbeinu Shalom for it. It's at a very, very high level. And then be mevakish from the Rebbeinu Shalom for the future, that we're not, in fact, to be afflicted anymore. Here's a question about schoolers, the name of the Arizal, the death from a plague, all of these things. You know, schoolers, they do have a place in Yadus. And there are many things that we learn Masechta Shabbos. You will discover that if you haven't learned it before, there are many refuahs, cures, which also have a schooler nature to it, meaning that they don't operate in the realm of normal medicine, and that they're not as effective as normal medicine, but sometimes they can solve the problem for us when other approaches don't. Schoolers were very careful about schoolers, where they come from, who's responsible for them, and the general klalot that wrote in the swarm of great, you know, dilemma of previous generations. We can involve ourselves in schoolers. It is the general practice in the Lithuanian world that to the largest extent we stay away from schools. Most schools we stay away from. A little bit of the ones that come from Greek Doylan, you may dabble in a little bit, but the essence of our approach is to be responsible to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We're not overly involved in schools. It's a very interesting question. Someone's who's going to be up the whole night on Shavuos, and he's davened already, and he comes home, and his wife is up. So he wants to know if he can make kiddush for his wife, assuming she didn't daven Shavuos. And the answer is, it depends. If she's always particular not to eat before she daven Shavuos, then he can't make kiddush for her before she daven Shavuos. Because the obligation of kiddush comes at a time when one's allowed to eat and have a meal on Shabbos. So after Shachar, at least some measure of eating is allowed. And even a lot, at least a light meal, and one's allowed to eat. And therefore, so if she will not eat before she daven Shachar, then it can't be mitzvah before Shachar. If she's like most women with young children, that they don't have that luxury because they don't know exactly what time they're going to get to daven taking care of the children, and they eat when they arise in the morning, that you can hear Kiddush immediately. If we're davening at home after staying up all Shavuos night, if that's going to happen, we don't know what's going to happen yet, but what will we do about brachos? I mean, there are certain brachos that we have difficulty making. One of them, the Al Netilas Yadayim, we could only make before Shachos. Okay, the Shulchan Aruch, if one uses the facilities, the restaurants, and cleanses oneself, so one can make Al Netilas Yadayim and Asher Yotza. The Lechai Neshama is questionable, and it's a question, and especially after davening, once it's in Lechai Mesa, we can't say Lechai Neshama. So if our wife was up already, and she was able to make a Lechai Neshama, she could be right to us in such a case. Maybe she can, so we won't have that brocha on that day. So again, if a person is up the whole night, so they won't be able to make a Lechai Neshama. So if your wife was making that brocha, you could be Yotzei with her. Let's see what else. Do disposable aluminum pans that one reuses, for example, pans in which one makes challah that he uses to make new challah, then the next week requires three. This is the famous tshuva of Moshe Feinstein Zatzal, that if my intention is to use an aluminum pan more than three times, then I have to toivel it. If my intention is not, and then I have to toivel it even the first time I'm going to use it. If my intention is not to use it more than three times, then it doesn't need tefillah at all. So it's a mixed bag. Sometimes you have to toivel aluminum, sometimes you don't. But keep cheshbon, if one intends to use it regularly more than three times, one has to toivel it even the first time that one uses it. This is a very important question. In the halachos of yayin, yayin is a very sensitive matter in halacha. Right now I'm learning, I'm in the midst, in the latter second half of Masechet Avodah Zarah. In Masechet Avodah Zarah, one of the topics is stam yayin. Now wine is particularly touching because wine is used usually in religious services. Consequently, wine can be an actual offering to Avodah Zarah. They make libations, they pour the wine for the Avodah Zarah, etc. The wine can be an actual Avodah Zarah. Because of that, Chazal, when they came to wine in general, handled by non-Jews, which even though that's also for a different reason, and that is to prevent an overindulgence in socialization between Jews and non-Jews. But since wine could become Yayin Nesach, in general, they gave it many, many chumras. And to the extent that not only can I drink the wine of a non-Jew, but if a non-Jew touches my wine, it also becomes us, even though he hasn't actually worshipped the Avodah Zarah, because he could have worshipped the Avodah Zarah. And therefore, it becomes us. So this is the reason that we have to be very careful not to leave around the house wine, which is not mevushal. You know, people want to use yayin she'enam mevushal because there are some rishonim that hold it's preferable to do so for kiddush. And the halacha is such a preference, but that's a chumrah to drink stam yayinam, a wine that was handled by a non-Jew, is an iser. So rather than do a chumrah, we should be careful not to do an iser. So if we're in a situation that we have a non-Jewish worker regularly in the house, then we can't have yayin mevushal around where they're going to be. Yayin she'enam mevushal, one that is not cooked. So if there's a non-Jewish worker around regularly, a cleaning lady, etc., especially if you're not there, and she goes and leaves by herself, you're not there when she's there to supervise her, then you should not have yayin she'enam mevushal around, because it's going to be a very good, may produce a very shiloh, where the wine is actually usur and you have to spill it out. Now, with that background, if you have an open bottle of wine, as a non-Jewish person comes, are you still allowed to drink the wine? You know, if the wine was in a place in the house that they normally expected to go, in the end, is you cannot drink it. So you don't want to be leaving a bottle of wine, which is not kosher, in the refrigerator when your babysitter is coming. You're going to be out. It's going to be taking care of your two-year-old and going to the refrigerator to take food. And there's an open bottle of wine. You don't have to normally tell people to spill it out. Now, this is important, and this is there's a lot of misunderstanding about this. Certain of the larger bottles of grape juice, the Hasidim are very, very particular in this chumrah to use yayin shein mevushel, yayin wine which wasn't cooked for kiddush. Now, because of that, because many of them make kiddush on grape juice, so companies such as Kedem produce grape juice which is not mevushel, and the grape juice which is not mevushel has the same problems as wine. It could also become stam yayin. So we should be very, very careful. We should be very, very careful if we're bringing grape juice to us. Number one, check if it's mevushel or not. There are larger bottles of grape juice which are not mevushel. And if we're going to have non-Jews around the house, the same way that if we don't bring wine which is not mevushel, we should not bring grape juice which is not mevushel. And it would be subject to the same restrictions. And lechatchila shach paskins, that the Isser is not only an Isser to drink the wine, but it's also b'hanah too. One cannot have any benefit from stam yena. Other than b'mokum hefsid meruba, the other shach is mekel, that we can have hanah from it, even though one may not drink it. So this is very, very careful that we should, one should be very careful with this. It's a very unusual question, the next question, but it's a very real question. It doesn't happen that often, but I was sitting in the emergency room minding my own business when about six or seven people wearing personal protective equipment marched in. Apparently they are community activists who wanted to thank us for our service, for the people in the emergency room for being there for the community at such time during the corona crisis. Then one of us wanted to bless us in the name of their deity. What should I do? I don't think he has to do anything. He shouldn't do anything to acknowledge that he's, you know, accepting the blessing, nor should he do anything insulting to them. And it's a very interesting thing. It's brought really in the Shulchan Aruch. Let's say one's in a situation, for example, where a non-Jewish clergyman is going to come. And the custom in that community is to stand up to give him honor when he comes. And I'm there, what should I do? So the Halacha says I should stand up before he comes in. So I'll be standing when he comes. I'm not going to do something insulting. But on the other hand, I'm not standing up to honor him. But in this situation where he's totally passive, I don't think that he has to do anything. He should wish them well as they're leaving. They're people, obviously, of goodwill and appreciation. This is a question that I'm often asked. At what age should a child wait in between milk and milchix inflations? You know, at what age? So I tell people all the time, till the age of six, don't even think about it. After that, slowly start to just see that they're only milchix inflations together. That's all you need to do until six. After that, little by little, start to be mechanachten for shorter amounts of time, half an hour, until somewhere is 10, 11 years old, that they can then wait the full 6 hours together with everybody else. But as young children, it's really one doesn't have to be concerned about it. What is the bracha on Cheerios with large banana pieces? I mentioned before that I discussed this halacha with Rabbi Yoshua, Zecher Tzadik LeBracha, and he told me that the bracha is recited on whatever is the preponderance of what's there, the majority of what's there. So if there are more Cheerios than bananas, he's certainly not making the bracha on the banana pieces. And the truth is, in this case, when you have Cheerios with large banana pieces, even if it would be more banana pieces than Cheerios, you probably still wouldn't make a bracha on it because the Iker is the Cheerios in such a case. But when you have different things mixed together, You have different things mixed together of different brochas. So Yosha said you follow the roiv, and that's what you make a brocha on, and the meat you don't. So if you had Cheerios, even a lot with a lot of banana, but you would, the Cheerios, though it's substantial, it's not like one or two little pieces, but having a bowl of Cheerios, even with a lot of banana, Yosha specifically told me, irrespective of the size of the banana, or the potato, whatever it might be, one would not make a bracha on it if it is in the minority. let's see what we have here. Now, this is a common question today, and especially it's become more common in the last 2 months. You know, we live in the age of online, and it's an amazing thing today. I mean, you just can stay in your house, go on your computer, and the whole world comes to you. You don't have to leave. They come to your door, they bring whatever you want. You want clothing, you want food, whatever it is, it's all delivered. They bring it to you. Now, what happens if you get packages on Shabbos? It's not uncommon today. You order, you didn't specifically request for them to come on Shabbos, but especially now, nobody knows exactly what the shipping schedules are. There's such a frenzy in shipping that they don't know. They're going to get it to you. They'll tell you, we recently ordered something here in the house, and they said in about 8 days it'll be there. In 2 days or so, it came. But then from their standpoint, where they were looking, it was just as likely it could have taken 8 days to come. So one doesn't know, you know, you order it on Tuesday. Is it coming next Tuesday? Is it coming this Wednesday, this Thursday? You don't know. But something came on Shabbos to your house. It's not that you ordered it to come on Shabbos, that we shouldn't do. But it came on Shabbos. Now you come home, and there's a box sitting on the porch. So you don't want to leave it there the whole Shabbos. There are, unfortunately, the thieves also know that there are boxes all over the place, and they drive around and steal left and right. A very common problem in today's America. But the box may have come in chutz l'tchum. There may be mukta issues involved. So what I do recommend, and it's what I do personally, is I push it into the house, from the porch into the house with my foot, push it to the side and leave it there. The Chavetz Chaim with Mekel, that one may push something which is mukta with one's foot. So it's all, and you know, there's no hotzora involved, so I push it in with my foot to be sure, just in case there's some mukta issue that's involved with it. What is the correct way to make egg salad on Shabbos? Now, this is a huge commotion in the poskim. We're dealing with chopped liver salad, tuna salad, egg salad, the avocado salad, all of these types of salads of this nature. How should one make them on Shabbos? The real answer is you shouldn't make them on Shabbos. That's the real answer to the question. I mean, everyone is trying, you know, is acknowledging the fact that a lot of Klal Yisrael does make them. And they don't really, they're all, they're proud. The principal problem is losh together with them. When you take a salad, this small, very small pieces of a salad, and you use a liquid or a semi-liquid, such as mayonnaise, to mix together with them and hold them together, that's a violation of losh and shabbos. There may be a violation of toichen and mashing them up. So there are a number of questions with them. And in, almost in every sefer, like you'll open up a Hilchos Shabbos, is scratching to find some type of heter somehow, some ways to be able to be matered. But as I said, all the heterim are together, the daitiyah, together, limitzchus. None of them are really, you know, arrive at a point that makes it lechatchila to do so. And I discussed this with Rabbi Yosef Zitzal, and he was very strong on the fact that they should not be made on Shabbos. You should make them before Shabbos. You know, if you want to slice an egg up, just the slices, and then put it on some bread with some mayonnaise, that's fine. That's a challah with some mayonnaise. But to mash it up, finally, that does involve certainly a problem of losh. Maybe toichen is not by an egg, you're not going to have. But if you mashed up a vegetable in that fashion, you could have a problem of toichen as well. I'm missing part of the question here. Yeah? I'm just going to speculate. Can the mask, a person, I said that you're allowed to wear masks. The places throughout the world have allowed masks presently to be worn even where there's no air. Can there be one around the red neck and not covering the face? And I don't think in a place where there's no air, they should not be worn around the neck and not around the face. I would consider that itself. They're not serving a purpose in that regard for protecting the body. The heter is that they're protecting the body. And, you know, even though they're not the best protection in the world, but they do provide some measure of protection, that some things that might come our way and be drawn into our respiratory tract are not drawn in if we're wearing a mask. But if we're wearing it around the neck, that's just the hotzol, carrying it around with us. And isn't there a problem? You may remove the mask, similar to the issue about wearing gloves. I don't think it's similar to the issue of wearing gloves at all. Most people take off because of the fact that they would want to shake somebody's hand. But a mask, to the largest extent, one doesn't want to take it off because of the fact that there could be sakonos nefoshes involved. And furthermore, gloves are only a chumrah. It's only a chumrah not to wear gloves. And if a person wants to wear gloves, me'ikar adin, according to the strict bounds of the halach, is mutter to do so. And we're not concerned that he's going to take it off. So certainly here, where the mask is being worn for Bikuach Nefesh, we're not obligated to indulge in any chumus. Now this follows up on the aluminum pan things that we had before. Here's a person that's using an aluminum pan many times, I presume, and they want to know if they need tefillah. So what are they using the aluminum pan for? So if you want to take things that, which were not on the blech, put them on the blech on Shabbos, assuming that they are dried and fully cooked. So what's the din? So the din is if we have an upside down pan on the blech, which is an unusual way to cook, we're allowed to put them on the blech to reheat them on Shabbos. So this person wants to know, we're going to use the same 9x13 aluminum pan, I'll use it 10 times before it throws it out, upside down. And the answer is, since he's not using it for food purposes directly, he's using it for something else, so therefore there's no necessity of tefillah. Is there a concern with children touching food without washing the kitchen in the morning? There is a concern.
Hello.
Children. There is a concern.
Yeah, hi, what's up?
Children touching food. At what age? They're varied minhagim in different communities.
No problem.
At what age to be machbel? There are some that are machbel from the youngest age on a child.
Oh, yeah, they have a Zoom thing.
As soon as the child is born.
We were calling about what's going to go on now with Governor Cuomo.
On the other hand, others are makel have seen till the age of 3 because they say that for to have a ruach hatumah, tumah has to be that the person shayach to kedusha. Child until he's 3 years old, until according to the Rambam, the Rav Shulchan Aruch, the chinuch of mitzvahs begins in 3. So that's when a ruach tumah is shayach. So some communities wait until the age of 3. So there are, in fact, mixed opinions on that subject. A cutting utensil, I presume a knife, for example, that was kept with flesh utensils. But as far as I know, I didn't use it for anything flesh. But it was washed with flesh. There's a lot of flesh to make sharp food, also flesh. If it was washed with soap, you took a knife, a carved knife, and you washed it with soap with a milchik sponge or a flesh sponge, I would not be concerned. If it wasn't washed with soap, since it's a knife, I would caution a knife. Because a knife, as we know, since it cuts onions, can make an awful lot of trouble in the house. If you think it's parah, but it's milchik, so you cut an onion, So now that you think it's a parva onion, you put it into the cholent, but it's a milchika onion. So now you have milk in the cholent. So that's not a very good thing to have. You're going to make a lot of shyness for me, so please kasha the night before you do that. Does a glass container that holds a fleishik sharp food for 24 hours become fleishik? And the answer to that is no. We don't presume for a whole year's use that glass absorbs anything. The chometz is something else. This is not chometz. In general, you know, we try not to go back in davening if we haven't had proper kavanah. It's not a good practice to get into, to say, oh, I didn't have kavanah, let me say that again. It's not a practice that leads to any healthy, to a healthy place. However, if a person is concerned that he didn't have proper kavanah in the first brach of Shmoneh Esrei, the Chazon Ish said he doesn't have to go back. He can just stop and rethink all the words from, let's say, Elokei Avraham or wherever he feels he didn't have proper kavanah up to the point where he's at, and then continue. But as I said, in general, I'm not a big advocate of going back. You know, once you pass the first bracha, certainly not. It's not a healthy thing to do. Okay, I think I've taken care of the questions. I've taken care of the submitted questions. So we can open the floor presently to is it permitted to fold a cloth napkin that doesn't have a previous fold in Shabbos without making the crease? There's no issue whatsoever. There is. We're not supposed to make creases that we want, that look nice in clothing on Shabbos. Putting a cloth napkin, and you're not making a hard crease in it, there's certainly no issue whatsoever. The ones they tachton after the private Shmoneh Esrei, so that they can do Shnayim Mikro waiting for Chazaras Hashatz. You know, it's not normally we prefer to say tachton together with the tzibur. So I would not go ahead in such fashion.
Everyone, raise your hand. It's by the participant. Participants is a thing to raise your hand virtually.
Richie Coker.
Yeah. If one takes down their mezuzahs in order to paint, when one puts it back, do you put back with a bracha?
How long are the mezuzahs going to be down?
2-3 days? 4 days or something like that.
Yeah. If you're not, it's a suffix if you have to make in such a case. Since you took them down and do intend to put them back, and it's not, you know, forever, it's just an immediate thing, I would say it's a suffix if you have to make a problem in such a case. Okay. If you have a new mezuzah you're putting up, which was never, let's say one was possible, maybe that's something else.
No. Okay.
If one uses a non-food kli, such as, in other words, I take a scissors, food use, must it be toyhul? I take a scissors and I use it to cut, cut a piece of chicken. But there's no kfiyas for it. It's not the norm to be used. This is just an aberration. One's not included in tefillah and such a thing. Sweet Fishman.
You gotta unmute yourself.
You said before that for Shabbos we should be having fish for each meal. Does that hold true for Yontif as well?
Does it hold true? I believe so. I'm not 100% sure. I saw it more in the context of Shabbos, but I don't know a difference between Suda Shabbos and Suda Slev.
Okay. And one other question. We got our checks from the IRS. Are you supposed to take Maisa from that?
L'chayra, it's an income, right?
Right.
You know, so if you get income, you're supposed to take Maisa.
Okay.
Use it well and in good health.
Thank you. Okay.
David Meltzer, The chassid himself. Where's the chassid?
Thank you. The question about the glass, so we don't normally assume it absorbs anything. So could I lecharchila take a glass coffee mug and use it at a fleishig meal?
We prefer not to do it. The Shach says we prefer not to use kalim at both milchig and fleishig meals, but a concern that maybe they won't be 100% clean. So this is something, okay, you know, we try to avoid.
And what about like a water pitcher? The same water pitcher?
Water pitchers are not the same. You don't eat from a water pitcher. You know, it's less likely that they could have on the inside milchig salvations.
Okay.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Am I on?
You're on. Yes.
Thank you, Rabbi. Thank you. Would the Rav address whether the neshamas of male and female are separated in Shemayim or?
It does not seem that they are separated. The some sefer writes that two people that are married, their neshamas are in Shemayim connected to each other. That's what some cigarettes.
Thank you.
Hello.
Could Rebbe clarify at the beginning? Rebbe was talking about a soup, chicken soup, let's say, or vegetable soup at different brachas, but I think last week Rebbe was saying cholent is all one bracha. I'm a little confused.
No, I didn't. I said cholent is normally, let's leave out the barley for the moment. So whatever's the roi, which is usually potatoes, so you make adoma on it. Mm-hmm. And if you put barley into it, so when I had a discussion with Rav Yosef Zilberstein Shlita, and he told me the following, that if it is a gzayis b'chdei achilas pras, means 1/8 of the cholent is barley, then just make a mezonis and everything else is bokim. If it's not, because mezonis is not bokim all. If it's less than 1/8, it's still not bokim, so you make a broch on the mezonis, but everything else you should still make a broch on. So you make adom on the potatoes. Now we're talking about a soup. So a soup, it depends. A soup is a liquid and a solid are two different things. So if I have noodles in a vegetable soup, so I have to make a brocha on the noodles, but there's certainly, it has nothing to do with the soup part. So I have to make adom on the soup part. That's under Moshe Rabbeinu. So I hope that I've clarified it.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Okay. It's probably better not to do it at such a time. Okay. Yossi.
Good evening, Rabbi. Last night in the shiur you said, Yontif, if you're going to mash something like potatoes, it's best not to do it in a bowl or
yes.
On a plate. You said a cutting board.
No.
Yes.
What about using a aluminum tin?
Interesting.
No, nothing with sides.
Nothing with sides.
Nothing with sides. Yeah. No.
Are you allowed to use a fork, or you should use?
You could use a yont if you could use a fork also.
Okay. Thank you, Rabbi.
On top of a Ziploc bag, not inside. It shouldn't be contained. That's what I think.
Okay. And my wife has another question.
Yes.
All right. I'm planning to serve a milchig meal on Friday lunch of Shavuos, which will probably contain Parmesan cheese. Do I have to wait time before I eat, and how much time before I eat fleishiks?
What if you're going to use Parmesan cheese, make sure you're getting one that was not aged for 6 months. If you use Parmesan cheese, which was aged for 6 months, in what way are you planning to use it?
And melted.
If it's totally melted, there are heterum not to wait 6 hours. I get it. If if it's a globs on the top of it, it doesn't know. Even if it is melted, you'd have to wait 6 hours. And it's certainly preferable if you get one that wasn't aged 6 hours. And the holiday is you don't have to wait 6 hours.
Thank you.
Ronnie Schlanger. Ronnie.
Thank you. Sorry, I had to unmute.
The Rav mentioned that like a vegetable soup, you would make a hadama on it. But I guess you're presuming that's a soup that has pieces of vegetables in it.
No, you don't have to have pieces of it. A pea soup, even if it all dissolved, you still make hadama.
But you wouldn't make a shahakol because it doesn't have the form of the vegetable?
No, the whole terrace in the shahar. You know, a vegetable soup, you make hadama.
Oh, wow.
Lisa.
Yeah, good evening. If you have, we say that Friday night, we usually say you need a larger shear for Kiddush. They say especially when by the Seder, if the Seder is Friday night, the first Kiddush should be larger because it's the Raisa. But I mean, there's a whole thing with Rabbi Akiva Eger and all that. You really yotze the Raisa in shul. So when you come home, it's like the same derabanan as any other kaisis. So why do you need a larger kais Friday night?
We're not so sure that the yotze the deraisa. The question is the following. Generally speaking, you know, that we have, since the time of the Noid of Yehuda, started a huge commotion about the shiur. Because based on the Gemara Pesachim led him to one shiur, and based on the Gemara elsewhere in Shas led him that the shiur is different. There are two ways to measure. You can measure by displacement of eggs. 1.5 eggs constitutes a rabbius. And then the Gemara tells us that if you have a vessel, which is 2 fingers by 2.7 fingers, that also contains a rabbius. And the Noda Yehuda was industrious, and he had someone make him such a vessel. And he found out that the amount of wine was double the amount that he had from his eggs. So he started a commotion which hasn't ended in 2.5 centuries, going on 3. So the minig is that since Friday night Kiddush is a deraisa, we use a greater shear. Now we're not sure that we yotze a Kiddush between them. The Chofetz Chaim, the Morgan Avraham does say such a thing. And there's a huge Biur Halacha there in the beginning of Siman Reish Ayin Aleph, wondering how it could be true. And he heroically tries to defend, you know, provide some defense for the Magen Avraham. But the problem is that the Gemara says in Kufi Zayin on the base of Socha that when one makes Kiddush, one has to mention Zeichel Tzias Mitzrayim. And there's no mention of Zeichel Tzias Mitzrayim in Shmon Esra. So how could there be Yetzi Kiddush Dereis? So really, we should assume Ukma Adinam, Ikra the dinner. We should say we don't understand the Magen Avraham, and we're assuming that we have a derisa when we come to the Kiddush Friday night. The Chofetz Chaim, this as a royal Yoshin Zatzal once told me, the Magen Avraham is the Magen Avraham. There are things which, if anyone else said, we would dismiss immediately. But when they come from the Magen Avraham, we stand with phenomenal derech eretz for them.
Yeah.
And consequently, the Chofetz Chaim says what the Magen Avraham means is that I mentioned Tzchiras Tzias Mitzrayim in Shema and in the Amunah Kol Zois, and that together with Shmon Esrei, then I'm Yotze. We don't have a clear way to say necessarily that we are Yotze. There are Shittas that hold that way. The Tzlach, in fact, in some Brochus, I believe, but in Aleph, but the Tzlach also assumes that we are Yotze. But as I said, this is not, you know, a universal Yisod.
Okay.
Alan Hochstein.
Question came up, the Rav was speaking about chulent. If one has a chulent in a chulent pot, and sometime during Friday night, the power goes off, and then at some point later it goes back on, issue of bishalakum, and I guess there are several variations, one if it was fully cooked or not fully cooked, and one if it, if it's still hot or if it cools down significantly. If it cooled down, I guess you had to let it fall.
You know, I would not think that it's together b'shalach in such a case. You know, since there was no intention of the non-Jew to cook it, I don't believe, if I recall correctly, I have to check, but if I recall correctly, when there's no intention to do cooking, I don't think there's an issue b'shalach that's involved. That's what I remember. I would not think that it would tend to be a problem. And especially if it could be made or we are mitzvah. The fact if something is in Beis Hashem Yisrael, particularly if the non-Jew is not at all in Beis Hashem Yisrael, that it's certainly a big mokum to be mako, to not to consider that to be bishlam. If it was already one third cooked already, then it's certainly not bishlam. Which is in the case that you're describing, one of during the night, is certainly not going to be bishlam.
Okay.
Then there's lachmet.
What's that?
Good evening, Rabbi. What are the parameters of using measuring cups and measuring spoons on Yontif?
Basically, you shouldn't use them on Yontif. Measuring devices should not be used on Yontif. If you want to use them, you don't measure precisely. You just put it in approximately.
Okay, thank you.
Rabbi, I have a question. Is Yoni.
So yeah, good evening, Yoni.
Oh, Shem. Thank you, Rabbi. Good evening. So about the cholent on Shabbos, we don't like to use a separate bowl on cholent for each person, just as not to put cholent on the same plate as something else that might be cooked, that might get cooked from the cholent.
If you you mean the father, if you're going to put the cholent in with liquids which are not cooked in the same plate, it's a shayla on Shabbos. You know, let's say you have a salad, so you don't put the, you know, and you have the, let's say you have something from the salad, liquid from the salad, water from the salad, so you should not put it in the same plate as a child. That's true. Because there is a chumrah, it's brought in Yoredeya, it's in Kuchay, but this chumrah is accepted as the chatchila's normative practice. And that is, there are, in general, we say the following. There's Kli Rishon, Kli Sheni, Kli Shlishi. Kli Rishon means something, the food that was cooked in something. Kli Sheni is the food that where we put it into the next utensil. And Kli Shlishi is the third utensil that we put it into. First one being the one we cooked in. First degree removal from the pot. Second degree removal from the pot. And second degree removal getting to Kli Shlishi. Now, consequently, how does it, so that, and there are different halachas for Kli Rishon, Kli Sheni, Kli Shlishi. There are Rishonim that say that this comfortable distinction is only true when it comes to liquids, because liquids are poured through the air, and a great deal they lose heat as they're being poured. Liquids, they mix throughout the bowl that you put them into, or a glass, and they have heat that gets absorbed into the walls throughout the whole thing as it does mix. And therefore, this distinction of Kli Rishon, Kli Sheni, Kli Shlishi is true for liquid. But when it comes to clumpy solids, you take a potato, put a potato in the microwave, and take it out. What's the first thing you have to do? You cook the raw potato in the microwave. You take a fork, and you cut it open, and you stay back. Because a ton of steam is going to come out, because it's all trapped inside. And it's way too hot to eat, so you have to let it cool down a little bit. So because of that, since solids tend to trap heat within them, and they don't allow the heat to leave so readily, so these Rishonim state that we don't have this distinction between Kli Rishon, Kli Sheni, Kli Shlishi when it comes to a solid. And consequently, even it's always considered Kli Rishon, and we cannot put an uncooked liquid into a Kli Rishon that's certainly going to cook. So if we're putting liquids on the same plate, uncooked liquids on the same plate as a cholent, that would be inappropriate. We should put the cholent aside.
Thank you. Is gravy that's on the plate?
Gravy is not a problem. Gravy was cooked already. Once it was cooked already, Rami just said this cholent is not a problem. Leon Stern.
Thank you.
This is a question. The kitchen door leads to a porch, which is only accessible through that door. Should the mezuzah go on the right side from the porch into the house or from the house into the porch?
Let me just amplify Leon's question. I have a porch which goes out to a deck. The deck is not accessible from the street. So the only way to reach the deck on this porch is to go through this door and go out. So do I put the mezuzah on the right door on the door going out or the door coming in? And this is really a machlekes achrayim. The Chazon Ish Tzatzal disagreed with earlier achrayim on this subject. The Minigan Chutz Lawrence is we put it on the right side going out, and the Minigan Eretz Yisrael is like the Chazon Ish that they put it on the right side going in. So I think that I've answered your question. part of a kettle sitting on the range that has residue from the oven vent, what is its status? Now, this is a problem that we have, that many of the ovens, if you have the stovetop and the oven in one unit, that the oven vents through the top of the stovetop, and sometimes through one of the burners in the stovetop. That's where it comes in, not even in the back. So what happens if you have some heat that came up from the oven? They had inflation, so we're making a roast beef, and I have a power of a pan, or even more a milchik pan, and got some of this steam or heat on it, what's the deal? And it depends the following. If there is steam on it, it's somewhat wet, then it's a problem. Then it has a status, for example, the way I'm cooking the roast beef. The steam came out and it's wet, that steam is inflation. Now, if it hit the pot when it was hot, the pot would have to be kosher. If it hit the pot and it wasn't hot, the pot wouldn't have to be kosher. But if I didn't clean off the pot and then I cooked it, I may still have to kosher. So with the shan, this is something to be very careful about, is to keep pots away from where the vents, where the stove vents, because this is going to produce shilas. If you do have such shilas, call the rov. Gary Esterson.
You got to unmute. Gary, you got to unmute.
Sorry. Kvod HaRav, if you please allow me to ask this question. It's very relevant to myself and especially to many of the Haverim who are in the membership. I'm hoping this is the correct time, but it's a very important question to me personally. Regarding an individual who's, let's say, in the later 60s, those people, at least according to, I'm sorry to ask you this time, it's really important. Those people who are elderly, that at least according to the guidelines of Aguda and others, they will be forbidden or boxed out of going to any type of minyan, any shape or form to the third phase. Could you clarify that? I'm sorry I'm asking you at this time. It's really important to me.
Okay. I will come back to this at the end. I'm going to address the issues of the Beis HaKnesses and where we're going forward at the end of the share today. So just allow
me. Thank you. Thank you.
I have a Chinese takeout with cashews that is a blend of vegetables and chicken. The chicken. What is the question is, if there's a clear roiv that something is the roiv, one bracha, you would make a bracha on that. It depends what's the roiv. That's what I believe. If you have a mix, usually it depends if it's just a little bit of chicken or a lot of vegetables, you make a bracha on the vegetables. Okay. Anyone else? What is the status of a pair of cutting utensils that went through a flashing load in a dishwasher? You couldn't be mako, that it does not make. In other words, if I put a pair of a knife in flashing a dishwasher and I found it there afterwards, I don't have to consider it flashing. No, once I'm not putting that, that's also not part. Tell them we're going to the end of the share. The last question, and then I will address the issues of the tumultuous events of the last day. Isa.
Unmute, sir. Mr., you're muted.
Right. A little bit of personal question. I've been dealing with a problem the last 2 days of a kidney stone. So you have to drink a lot. So I'm drinking water every time I think about the fact that I have to drink, but I'm not really thirsty. So could I get? Do I have to make any brachas on
shakalim? No, you don't have to make. If you're making a bracha drinking solely for the purpose of flushing out a kidney stone, you do not make a bracha.
So I could go pretty much all day with that, yes. Unless I'm.
Now, sometimes it may be thirsty. That's something.
Yeah, but I'm thirsty. Right.
You have to flush the kidneys out, the crystals that form there. Then you do not have to make a bracha.
No Rishayna, no Achrayna.
No. Okay, Rabbi Sai, Mark?